Everybody, hopefully we are now recording. This is the first time I have done a recording myself on Zoom. I'm here to do a brief recap of the December 9th class, which was yesterday, which was mostly lost due to a recording glitch. I just want to mention that there is the last 8 minutes of the class were preserved, and that will also be available if you want to hear some of the live discussion. I'm going to do my best to reconstruct the topics we talked about and just go over the same material that we went over yesterday. So as always, we will start with briefly bringing our minds to rest, just letting our minds settle in the present moment of awareness, open awareness or follow your breath, whatever is most helpful. And now we're going to do the prayers. In Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha, I take refuge till I awaken to all the virtues such as giving. May I reach Buddhahood for beings. In Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha, I take refuge till I awaken through all the virtues such as giving. May I reach Buddhahood for beings. In Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha, I take refuge till I awaken through all the virtues such as giving. May I reach Buddhahood for beings. Prostrating, offering, confessing, rejoicing, urging, supplicating, whatever virtue I've collected, I dedicate it to awakening. The ground perfumed and strewn with flowers, Meru for continents, sun and moon, this imagined Buddha field offering, may all beings dwell in the pure realms. I forgot to do the mandala. Mudra, sorry about that. According to the different propensities of beings, please turn the wheel of Dharma, great, lesser, and uncommon. And the teaching prayers. Tadam sem shen tam che lo chu su dro or zin ji lop tu sol, chu lam du dro or zin ji lop tu sol, lam trupa sol or zin ji lop tu sol, trupa yishi su jar or zin ji lop tu sol. I pray for blessing. May my mind and the minds of all sentient beings turn toward the Dharma. I pray for blessing. May the Dharma become the path. I pray for blessing. May the path clarify confusion. I pray for blessing. May confusion arise as wisdom. Lai ke dang lu dan nu chen ke cholum da da mi ke nam dang drawa kunji dra ke ji sampar tam che ke du da ki che ten to. In the tongues of Nagas, Yakshas, gods, those of demons and of humans too. In the many languages there are, may I teach the Dharma in them all. To begin, please give rise to the thought that in order to benefit all sentient beings whose numbers fill the extent of space, I must attain the level of perfect enlightenment. In order to bring this about, I will practice the profound Mahayana Dharma by way of study, contemplation, and meditation. So we began yesterday with a brief recap of links 1 through 7, which is how far we've gotten in the book. We're mainly using Trungpa Rinpoche's book, very short book, 12 Links of Interdependent Origination, which is available for Kindle, which I have, and also available as a PDF. You can Google it if you don't have it. And we are using a couple of diagrams of the Wheel of Life, which is where we find the depiction of the 12 links of interdependent origination. I got this one just by Googling 12 Links Buddhism, and this one is from Kala Rinpoche's book, Luminous Mind. So I guess we'll just look again at those in the middle. We have in the middle of the Wheel of Life, which is held by Yama, the Lord of Death. We have the three poisons, the three emotional poisons, the pig representing ignorance or confusion, the snake representing aversion or hatred, and the rooster depicting representing desire. Those are the three root poisons that are the start of all our trouble. And then outside that, there's one ring missing, as we've discussed before, here showing someone's karma, like it takes them up to the higher realms or down to the lower realms. This doesn't actually have that ring. That's why we have this one. It says the next ring, outside this inner ring that's missing, which shows a person going up or a person going down through their karma. These are the six realms of samsara, in which one can find oneself, from the hell realms up to the gods realms. We're all familiar with those. And then on the outside is the actual cycle of mental actions, and then verbal and physical actions that bring about the karma that places us in one of these six realms. And again, these realms can be understood as places as they traditionally are presented, or as psychological states, as Trungpa Rinpoche in particular presented them. We can all cycle through these same six realms again and again, even in the course of a single day, and certainly in a particular lifetime, we might be more, find ourselves more having a tendency toward one psychological state or another. So that is this diagram is very useful, and I recommend studying it. So we've done the first seven links from Trungpa Rinpoche's book. And again, the disclaimer is that I'm really not an expert on the 12 links of interdependence. So we're exploring this together. And you may learn, you'll learn more as you study it further beyond this class. So the first link, what starts the whole process, is called ignorance. And it is basically the confusion of not recognizing the reality of how things are, in particular of mistaking relative reality for ultimate reality, mistaking what is impermanent for something that's permanent, mistaking what is illusory, really dreamlike, for something solid. That's ignorance. That's what starts the whole chain. Second link is karmic impulse. And again, I'm just reviewing these. If you want a fuller discussion, you can read Trungpa Rinpoche's book. Karmic impulse is the stirring of karmic patterns from previous lifetimes, habits that we have developed in previous lifetimes and we bring with us into this lifetime, are what stir out of just the basic sort of unmanifested confusion of ignorance. And this stirring of karmic impulses brings about the third link, which is consciousness. The karmic impulses solidify into mental patterns that we will then, in future links, carry forward into the next life or the next moment. Consciousness is like the formation of our personality for this life or this moment of our existence. Our new personality or our new set of experiences begins to take shape in the third link, consciousness. The fourth link, name and form, is where this consciousness that has developed begins to take physical form. The five skandhas are now complete, and as Trungpa Rinpoche explained in his book, we're talking here about, like, in terms of the physical form, it's very embryonic. We're talking about the embryo in the womb, not a fully fledged human being or animal or etc. So name and form, conscious and now, has the beginnings of a physical form, completing the five skandhas, which are basically our identity in this life, our sort of illusory identity. So then that leads to the fifth link, or opens the way to the fifth link, which is the development of the sense doors or the sense perceptions, called many different things, the sense faculties. And this consists, my understanding of this is that it consists of the sense organs, eyes, ears, nose, and so forth, and their objects, sights, sounds, and so forth, through which we will relate to what we perceive as the outside world through our ignorance, self and other. That is sort of the basic misunderstanding of ignorance itself, and other are separate, independent, freestanding, permanent things, as opposed to just designations, relative designations. So then we have everything we need now to begin to relate to an outside world, which is what happens in link six. In link six is called contact, and it refers to the contact of these sense faculties from link five with their objects through the link of consciousness, as Trang Rinpoche explains it. This is where we actually begin to experience outer phenomena. So then in link seven, we react to those outer phenomena. And it's a very rudimentary reaction at this point. Our immediate response to contact with any object is, through any sense, is pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. And we could examine our experience. This is actually a very useful way to examine our experience, is just watch that happen as you go throughout your day, or as you have thoughts, because thoughts are objects too. They're the objects of the mental mental sense or mental consciousness. So everything that we encounter is like is pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. And that is such a, so it's not very defined yet. And so we probably don't even notice that happening. So let's pay attention to that and see if we can, because if you can connect with that, then as we'll see in links 8 through 12, if you could just connect with that feeling of pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral and identify that, then you would be so on top of whatever more fully fledged emotional reaction is going to develop out of that, because that's what happens in link 8. So what we're going to do now, as we did in class yesterday, is we're going to page 17. Thank you, John Rennish, for that page number. we're going to go back to link 7 in Trang Rinpoche's book, which I'm looking at on my Kindle, and start. It's towards the end of the explanation of link 7, where Trang Rinpoche talks about how the links work together. And I just wanted to review that, even though we went over that at the end of the last class on December 2nd. This is very important information to see how the links work together to create our experience. So reading from Trang Rinpoche now, the 12 links can be grouped in various ways. Looking at these links globally, the first two links of ignorance and karmic creation, or we're calling it karmic impulse, are the cause for the next five links of consciousness, name and form, the perceptual entrances, or we call them the sense faculties or the sense doors, contact and feeling. This means that through the main root of ignorance, we made the karmic creations or karmic impulses in former lives, which then give rise to links 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7 in this life. So that's all one thing. Like, there's nowhere, we've talked a lot about looking for where we could intervene in this cycle of confusion to head it off so that we don't experience the full thing. We don't keep falling into the same quicksand of samsara again and again. There's nowhere, I don't think there's anywhere to intervene once ignorance has taken hold. Like, that's, you can intervene in ignorance. That's what all of our practice is about. Excuse me, my Kindle just shut down. That's what all of our practice is about, is intervening in ignorance, developing wisdom to counteract ignorance. But once we get to link two and the karmic impulses begin to stir again, then 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7 unfold automatically. There's nothing that we can do in there that I know of. So in other words, our present consciousness and the links that follow are conditioned by previous ignorance and karmic conditions. The way that consciousness is imprinted determines the fourth link of name and form. So from your mental aggregates, or your mental aggregates, like whatever the content of your mental aggregates is going to determine what your form is. So the way that consciousness is imprinted determines the fourth link of name and form. name and form in turn give rise to the perceptual entrances or the sense doors. Due to the sense doors, there is contact. With the external perception, the sense organ and the consciousness is coming together, we get the seventh link of feeling. So sense faculty encounters sense object and apprehends it based on consciousness, the sense consciousness. All of those things coming together, we get the full sensory impression. We hear a sound, we see a sight, we feel a tactile feeling, etc., etc. We think a thought. and that is what creates the seventh link of feeling, the reaction that we have to it. So Trungpa Rinpoche explains, each link leads to the next, but in terms of a larger view, the first two links relate to past lives, ignorance and karmic impulses, and then give rise to the next five links, which have to do with this life, consciousness through feeling. In their turn, these five links, consciousness through feeling, are the basis for how one acts in this life, which will create future lives. So you see, we now have like a full cycle. Trungpa Rinpoche says there is a constant play of causality on smaller and greater levels. So now we're going to skip the last little bit about feeling, because we went over the feeling link last week. And now we're on to link 8, grasping or involvement. So yes, we had a whole discussion yesterday about this translator's note in Trungpa Rinpoche's book, and I don't remember who translated the book. And I agree with them in one way, but I'm not sold on their terminology. So I think we're going to go back to the more standard terminology that we get from Kala Rinpoche and Situ Rinpoche. So the translator calls link 8 grasping or involvement, and neither one of those is the standard terminology for this link, as you know, according to what I've studied. He or she explains a better translation for the 8th link is involvement rather than grasping, since it concerns an involvement with the objective world that one experiences. And I, while I disagree with this, I see the point is that they're looking for a neutral term, because each of these links, 8 through 10, refers to either a positive or a negative relationship with an object. So if you call it craving, which link 8 is called craving by both Kala Rinpoche and Sita Rinpoche. So if you call it craving, that implies that you want it. But really, link 8 also includes things that you have aversion to. If it gives you a pleasant feeling, then you crave it. If it gives you an unpleasant feeling, then you try to get away from it. So we're going to sort of make the mental adjustment here that when we talk about craving, when we use the term craving, we mean positive or negative craving, craving to have something or craving to not have something. So I'm going to try to remember to substitute the word craving here for where this translator says grasping or involvement. And again, as I've said before, it's not that Trungpa Rinpoche is using different terms. He's using the Tibetan word, and different translators interpret it different ways. So to continue, this craving can be part of a certain situation, such as being in love and grasping at one's loved one, grasping in like the sense of wanting to be with them and so forth, or a feeling that one has to have people's admiration and respect, or desperately holding on to a material possession such as a house or car or form of entertainment. We could think back on our day and see if we have experienced craving for anything. When there is a pleasant feeling, one wishes to keep that feeling of pleasantness. So that applies to all of those examples. One's mind becomes involved in clinging to this subjective experience, this pleasant experience. However, besides clinging to nice experiences, we also reject unpleasant feelings, and we want to keep away from unpleasant experiences. Craving can be clinging or rejecting. In both, there is some kind of involvement with the objective world that one experiences because of the way it makes us feel. So back to link 7, the feeling arises, pleasant or unpleasant, and then we develop craving to be to have more of it or craving to have less of it, depending on whether it's pleasant or unpleasant. And if it's neutral, not much of a craving, I would think. So here he says, actually, there are three kinds of involvement: clinging, rejecting, and indifference. So with indifference, we're probably not pursuing or trying to get away from the thing, but in some sense, we've still progressed to link eight because the cycle goes around. Due to a pleasant feeling, one's involvement with that feeling grows to a point where one decides that one definitely needs to acquire the things which give rise to the pleasant feeling. On the other hand, one may decide that one needs to get away from the things that give rise to unpleasant feelings, and that is the ninth link. That's what Trungpa Rinpoche says. So once you make a decision to go after something or to get away from something, that becomes link nine, which we are going to call grasping. That's what Kala Rinpoche calls it. Sita Rinpoche calls it pursuit. He also uses the word addiction, which I think is also very helpful. So grasping or pursuit. It's called adoption in Trungpa Rinpoche's book because the translator is trying to find a neutral term, but we're going to ignore that. So the link of craving, either wanting something or avoiding it, leads to the ninth link of grasping or pursuit, in which one makes definite plans to get the object of one's desire or to avoid something one has deemed unpleasant. At this stage, the process is still mental. We have not done anything yet. In the 10th link, this decision is put into action. So here we have the 7th link. Just to go back, 7th link, which is still automatic. I don't think that we can ever get beyond experiencing things, at least, you know, incipiently as pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. And I'm not sure we would really want to go around in a neutral state all the time. But that's just my take on it. But then, so then in the 8th link, it becomes what we call craving, which is this feeling of wanting more of it or wanting less of it. And then in the 9th link, which is grasping or pursuit, we formulate a plan. I'm going to buy the ice cream. I'm going to shut this person out of my life. We still haven't done anything, but we've formulated a plan. And in the 10th link, this decision is put into action. The 10th link is called becoming. So back to the text, the 10th link is called becoming because at this stage, one actually acts on all the things one thinks about. At this stage, we are doing actual physical or verbal or mental actions. So remember, as we have discussed before, that in the list of 10 unvirtuous actions, there's 3 that you do with your body, the physical ones, 4 that you do with your speech, the verbal ones, but there are also 3 that are purely mental that never enter into verbal or physical realms. And those are covetousness, ill will, and wrong view. So it's only at the 10th link that it becomes a full karmic action, whether it's physical, verbal, or mental. Since it is necessary for one to perform an actual action for karma to ripen at a later time, this stage is called becoming. The 8th link of craving is involved with wanting or avoiding something, and this leads to the 9th link of grasping or pursuit, in which one makes definite plans to get the object of our desire or to eliminate or avoid something we have deemed unpleasant. In the 10th link, this decision is put into action. We seal our fate in the 10th one. And this is something that we talked about in class fairly extensively, is that you could intervene. I don't think you could intervene at the 7th link, unpleasant, pleasant, or neutral. But at the 8th link, if you could see that coming, you could see that pleasant or unpleasant developing into craving, wanting to have it or not wanting to have it. You could work with that. We have a lot of methods to work with that at that point. And then especially when it gets stronger and you start to think about how you're going to bring about your wish fulfillment, we could catch ourselves doing that. And certainly for me, probably the coarsest, the grossest, the easiest to recognize is when we start to actually react verbally or physically, or we have a full-fledged, I want what that person has, or I want something bad to happen to that person. We could intervene there. I think it becomes less and less subtle as we move towards becoming. So it's going to be harder to catch it at craving, a little easier to catch it at grasping, and hopefully much easier to catch it at becoming. So we have three chances here to intervene. And at this point, I'm going to try to reconstruct some of the questions and comments that came up in class yesterday, just very briefly. But at this point, Dave Rogers, who seems to have some background in neuroscience, some understanding of neuroscience, which I don't particularly, he talked about some neurophysical correspondences here, neurophysical correspondences here, but I'm not sure that's the right word. But what he said that was really helpful was he said that he thinks of links 8 and 9 as the process of rumination, which is sort of a recognized process for how we get ourselves into negative or destructive mental states that then lead us into negative or destructive verbal or physical actions. This rumination, and he described it really well, which I'm not going to be able to reconstruct, but he talked about just how you go over and over and over like the same thought. And we could cycle again and again, actually from link 7, I think, oh, that feels good. I want more of it. This is how I'm going to get it because it feels good. So I want more of it. So this is what I'm going to do to get it. And so you have this whole process that could go on quite a lot. These are like sort of, I can't think of the word, but like thoughts that, like persistent thoughts that could stay in your mind. And if we could recognize that, that would be really helpful. We want to avoid rumination if possible, while, you know, our meditation instruction is all thoughts are welcome. We don't try to suppress thoughts, but what we can do is not buy into the thoughts. So if we're having rumination, you know, about some object that we either want or we want to avoid, we could catch ourselves doing that and just back off and think of it as like a dream, like an illusion, like something that's impermanent anyway. So why bother? Like, why get ourselves into trouble over it? Because it's going to go away anyway. Or it's, if we could remember that it's going to cause us suffering inevitably, because the Buddha taught that all of our experiences are suffering in essence. We could work on that process. We catch ourselves ruminating, we could work on that. So to continue with Trungpa Rinpoche, he gives here the basic explanation of karma, how karma works. And I mentioned yesterday in class that this corresponds with what Zhamgong Kongtrul said in The Torch of Certainty, right at the beginning of the chapter on karma, which is the third of the four reminders. He said that as ordinary beings, we cannot hope to understand the workings of karma. And so we should be satisfied at this stage, like until we reach actual realization, actual direct realization of emptiness, we should be satisfied with understanding karma in the way that Trungpa Rinpoche explains it here. And he says, and really it's all we need on a practical basis. He says, good actions bring about good results. Bad actions bring about bad results. So I think Zhamgong Kongtrul says, you know, positive actions bring happiness, bring happiness in the future. Negative actions or harmful actions set us up for suffering in the future. So because the fruition of our actions is determined by the action itself, it is called becoming and involves physical, mental, and verbal karma. These actions do not become nothing after they are finished. The way we act with our body, speech, and mind sows seeds that bring their fruit in the future. So once we have taken the action, the physical, verbal, or mental action in the 10th link, becoming, we can't do anything about it, and then we can't intervene. Like, again, there's no intervention from 10 through 12, except that we are taught that there are things we can do. There are practices that we can do, for example, to purify negative karma once we have incurred it. So there may be something that we can do, but once we enter into the action of link 10, the rest is going to unfold. And what is it that's going to unfold? Trungpa Rinpoche is going to describe the 11th and 12th links. But first he says the 10th stage or the 10th link of becoming is one of action. It is one of creating karma. Because of that, we come to the 11th link in this sequence of events. So link 11 is called rebirth. Because the actions taken in the 10th link cause effects in one's next lifetime, the 11th link is called rebirth. So I think it was Marilyn, somebody at this point reminded us that there are two results of karma, of a negative action, and one is, you know, you kill somebody, you have a very negative rebirth after that. That's like the karmic result of the action. But the other effect of an action is to reinforce a habitual pattern. So if you kill somebody or you kill a bug or you yell at somebody, you're making it more likely that you will do that again. You're kind of creating a groove in your mental patterns that will make it easier to do the same thing again. So that's how the actions taken in the 10th link cause effects in one's next lifetime, both through determining, it's going to determine links 3 through 7, right? That's that automatic process that unfolds from the karmic impulses re-arising. So we're creating those karmic impulses. In link 10, in our action, we're creating those karmic impulses that are going to re-arise in the next lifetime or the next moment and determine links 3 through 7. Because the actions taken in the 10th link cause effects in one's next lifetime, the 11th link is called rebirth. The karma that has been created will cause rebirth in samsara. Because of our karma, we will begin a certain type of life, which will start in the womb with the link called name and form. One will be born, the body will develop, and one's life will manifest with all its experiences according to the karma accumulated. Some experiences will be good and pleasant, others will be difficult and painful. All experiences occur because one has been born into a specific state. If you're born in as a human, you have certain opportunities and certain limitations. Born as an animal, same thing. Born in the hell realm, mostly limitations, maybe all limitations, other than the fact that the karma is finite and eventually you could be reborn somewhere else. So birth into a particular life is the basis upon which the various experiences occur. Because of birth, there will be all the various forms of suffering one has during life, which are dealt with in the 12th link. So the 12th link is called aging and death. So this is all the other suffering that unfolds once you have incurred the suffering of being reborn into a particular state, whether it's a state like a body in a particular realm or it's a state of mind in a particular psychological state. So aging and death. Although aging and death are two main forms of suffering for all of us, this name for the 12th link, aging and death, stands for all the various kinds of suffering, difficulties, and pain that take place in life. So we have the four main rivers of suffering, right? Birth, which was link 11. And then within link 12, we have not only aging and death, but we have illness and the other forms of suffering that are specific to our realm, in the human realm. It's the, you know, it's the suffering of not getting what you want or the suffering of, how does Catherine Lazar puts it? And she is in the Tuesday Night Classic, KTC, always put it as too much of what you don't want and not enough of what you want. So all the rest of the suffering unfolds from link 11 and is experienced in link 12. All the things which are unpleasant, burdensome, and so forth, right? That's what unfolds. All are there because one has been born, and once one has been born, they are inevitable. They are a part of the process of life. Once one is born, one begins to age. Once one is born, one must die. These are the inevitable consequences of birth. Included in the last link of aging and death is all the suffering of existence, which we call samsara. So we have now covered all the 12 links. We've done a survey of all the 12 links of existence. And I recommend rereading the chapter two in Trungpa Rinpoche's book, getting really familiar with them, looking at the diagrams more, because we can really work with this information. This gives us something to do and places to apply all of the practices that we've been taught. So far, it looks like we can intervene in link one, just whatever practice we do, whatever study, contemplation, and practice we do, intervenes in link one and lessens our ignorance, helps us move towards not being in a confused state, towards seeing things the way that they really are directly, in which case we wouldn't have to go through the other 11 links. The next opportunity to intervene seems to be link eight. And so we have link eight, where pleasant, unpleasant, neutral turns into craving. Link nine, where it turns into grasping our pursuit. And link 10, where we actually take that step into physical, verbal, or mental action. Those we can intervene in. And then once we've taken the action, rebirth and aging and death unfold, which we can also mitigate through practice, but I think it still has to unfold. In my understanding, it's still going to unfold back to ignorance again, and the cycle starts again. And so we've talked about this mostly. It's been mostly explained in terms of the cycle of birth and death. We've also talked a little bit about how it unfolds as like one moment of experience to the next, like in every moment we're recreating all these 12 links. And Trungpa Rinpoche is going to talk about that in the last chapter of this book, where he's going to take the example of killing, like, and show how that begins with ignorance and how that idea of killing develops through link 7, 8, 9 to 10, where we actually engage in the action of killing something, and then how we experience the karmic result of that in links 11 and 12. So that's going to be interesting. So I'm not going to try to explain that further here because I don't fully understand it. So we're ending in the text. We haven't quite finished chapter two. The next heading is the process of interdependent origination. He's going to talk more again about how all the links work together, how the whole process takes place. And we'll pick up there the next time we meet, which is going to be, I think, the first Sunday in January. We'll get that information to you. I think we're meeting the first two Sundays in January. Usually we meet the last two Sundays of the month, or the third and fourth Sunday. Sometimes there's a fifth. So usually it's the third and fourth Sundays of the month, but that schedule can vary depending on various factors. And in January, we'll meet early in the month. Let me see if there's anything else. So in my notes about the discussion, Marilyn also offered a good word. So we got the word rumination from Dave. Marilyn said that the word continuum is very helpful to her, the whole idea of this whole cycle being a continuum. And I mentioned that, yes, our mind stream is also called a continuum in the teachings. So that's another word we have. And then Fanny gave us the word reset, like, where can we do a reset? she works with, I think, elderly people in facilities, and she talked about the challenges of finding, like, when somebody's caught in a negative cycle of behavior, you have to find a way to reset them, or a moment where they can experience a reset. So, you know, to get them out of that negative, destructive cycle. And John also asked, is it possible to intervene with a newborn child, for example, and keep them from getting stuck in the cycle? And I think most of that discussion is in the fragment of yesterday's recording that we still have, the last 8 minutes. I think we're still talking about that. My response to that, my initial response was, I think it would be like stepping in front of a train to try and stop it, because we're a newborn child, like, according to Buddhism, is not a blank slate. There's no such thing as a blank slate. They're coming in with karmic patterns developed over many, many lifetimes. And so they're bringing all of that with them, and that is going to develop. They've already experienced birth, and they're going to now go through the rest of the cycle. But certainly there are things we can do, and I think that part of the discussion is in the other recording. Certainly we have a lot of tools to help children navigate. And Rama, I think this may also be in the other recording. Rama said something to the effect that while we are focusing on helping others isn't the main point of the teachings, to work on ourselves. And I heartily agreed with that, it's all about working on our own problems, working on our own issues, working on our own confusion, which doesn't mean that we can't help others, but it means that we're limited in how we can help others. Until we clear up our own confusion, how much we can help others is limited. And again, it's like the example of, you know, being on the airplane and the oxygen masks come down, and you're always instructed to put your own on before you try to help the person next to you, you know, your child or whoever it is, because until you have oxygen, you're at risk of not being able to do anything for anyone else. So I think that is all I have. So for us to try to instruct another person is sometimes a joke, because our own emotions are coloring how we see their situation and what they're doing. So our basic work in this lifetime, according to the Buddha, is internal. It's to work on ourselves. And when we can clarify our own mind, then we start to be in a position where we can really help others. And that said, if you have a child to work with, fabulous, you know a lot that will help that child, even if you haven't solved all your own problems yet. If you're a sincere student and practitioner of the Buddha Dharma or any other Dharma, Buddhist or not, by any other name, you know, there's ways you can help people, but mostly our effort is focused on ourselves. We don't have the capacity to help others, and we don't have the capacity yet to see them clearly either, and to help them without our own agenda. You know, sometimes it's our own agenda and we think it's helping the other person, but it's about us. Yes, Marilyn. Oh, sorry, I just muted you. You were already unmuted. Now we're good.
Okay, I just wanted to say that when we went to the Dalai Lama's Mind Life Institute symposium on teaching, it's clear that you can teach empathy, you know, right from the little children can be taught. Right. So I just despair that since we know this and it's been proven scientifically, we're still not doing it, obviously. So, but that sort of speaks to what John was saying.
And yeah. Was this recent? Like, was this a recent thing you went to? Or
years ago, maybe.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Empathy is like, that's what we want to awaken ourselves and help awaken in others too. Yes, Patrick.
Well, in that same presentation, they said that the real, all you can do is be a good example.
Yeah. Yes, I think that's actually the best thing you can do for anybody, is because we aren't always open to hearing people tell us how we should be, right? Oh, you know, you could be a lot happier if you would do this. Like, who can hear that from anybody? But yet to live it. I mean, that's why we follow the lamas, right? I don't want to get into any trouble there either, but we follow the lamas in their example as they live the Dharma, to the extent that they live the Dharma. Okay, great. Thank you, Patrick. Anybody else? We're at 1 o'clock now. Anybody have anything pressing they would like to ask or say? All right, good. Well, next time then, which will be in January, have we figured out January dates yet?
Yeah, I don't have them right in front of me, but it's like the 2nd and the 9th or something like that.
Right. So it's the beginning of the month again?
Yeah.
Because you guys are going to be away, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So it's the first two, probably the first 2 weeks of January we'll meet, because we just meet twice a month usually. So when we pick up again, it will be the process of interdependent origination at the end of the explanation of the 12 links, still in chapter 2. We'll finish chapter 2 And then I'm thinking we'll just plow on. I was going to skip the next chapter, which looked a little technical about different kinds of causes, but looking at it more closely, it looks really, really interesting and helpful. So that's okay with everybody. We'll just go through the book, which will take us a few more sessions. But I personally think this is very fruitful study that we're doing here. Okay, anybody have any parting comments before we do our prayers?
I'm still unmuted.
You're what?
Say
yes.
I'll show you our shrine room when this is finished. So I'll shift the computer around. So
okay. I'm going to show off my snow first.
Okay. You got this here.
We got a lot of snow out there. All right. All right, so we'll do our prayers, and then I'm going to take my computer to the window for a second, and you can see snow, which is very fascinating. And then we can see something much more sort of edifying, which is the shrine room at KDC. And then we'll say goodbye. And if anybody needs to leave, just leave, and it'll be fine. All right, so I'm going to make sure everybody's muted. And yes, everyone else is muted. And we will do our dedication prayers. Again, does anybody need me to screen share those, or we're all good with them? Okay, no screen share needed. All right, so collecting our attention again so that we can put it into dedicating the benefit of this study and discussion to the enlightenment of all beings. This merit, may it win omniscience, defeat my faults, the enemy. Then from the rough and stormy sea of birth, old age, death, and disease, from this ocean of samsara, may I liberate all beings. They know things in their true existence, Kuntu, Zangpo, and Manjushri. To train myself in their example, I dedicate this practice fully. May every being through this practice completely gather merit and wisdom, attaining the two sacred bodies that merit and wisdom emanate, the blessings of the Buddha Kayas, the blessings of changeless Dharmata, the blessings of the steadfast Sangha. This dedication, please fulfill. Letting our minds just come to rest for a moment again in open awareness. Noticing if anything feels pleasant or unpleasant or neutral. Just resting with that, letting it be part of our awareness of the present moment. And now I reprioritize. Let's see the KDC shrine room first, and then if anybody has to leave, they'll only miss the snow. Oh, let me unmute. Sorry, I have to unmute. Okay, I've unmuted you, Marilyn. And I would suggest everybody put it on, if you have gallery view, like you can see the Hollywood Squares, hit speaker view at the top, and then you'll see the full screen. Okay, Marilyn, you want to speak?
No, I just wanted to show the pictures.
Okay. All right, they have lots of beautiful tankas. Don't forget to show us white Tara.
Okay.
We have the most beautiful white Taratanka.
We have a big shrine. I can't quite see what I'm doing here. It's a small, wait a second.
It's good. We were seeing good.
Okay. And then we have a smaller shrine over here. And we have beautiful Tankas.
That's white Tara.
Can't see at all what being seen.
We're seeing white Tara and the refuge tree. This is the living room of Patrick and Marilyn's house on Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C., where they've had their center for going on 20 years now, right?
Yeah.
And there's Rama and Mike.
That's it.
Okay. Lovely. All right. I'm going to show my snow now. I don't know if you can see, but it's still coming down.
Whoa.
I'm in the same position as you. I don't know what you're looking at, but hopefully it's snow. Yeah, it's a good day to stay in and be cozy.
Oh, but it's also a good day to go for a wonderful snow walk.
Well, that's true. I do love snow walks. I used to live in New Hampshire, and I miss that kind of snow for the shoveling. All right, great to see everybody. And I'll see you again. I will send out the dates, but probably the first Sunday in January, I think.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Great to see everybody. See you next time. And I will exercise my superpower.